Chapter one, take two, two.
Nice.
In the last email Annie had sent Tucker, she'd posed the following question. What do you do if you think you've wasted 15 years of your life? She had no reply as yet, possibly because of the domestic turmoil he'd hinted at the last time he'd written, so she'd had to address the problem on her own. She was currently working on, and with the assumption, that time was money. What would she do if she'd just lost £15,000? It seemed to her that there were two alternatives. You could either write it off or try to get it back. And you could try to get it back either from the person who took it from you in the first place, or by trying to compensate for the loss in other ways, by selling stuff, or betting on a horse, or doing lots of overtime. This analogy was only helpful up to a point, obviously. Time wasn't money, or rather the time she was talking about couldn't be converted into cash, like the services of a lawyer, or a prostitute. Or rather, one last or rather, otherwise she'd have to concede that this whole way of thinking about time wasn't working. It could, theoretically, but nobody was going to pay her. She could knock on Gina's door and demand compensation for the time she'd wasted on him, but the value would be difficult to calculate. And anyway, Duncan was skint. She didn't want money, though. She wanted the time back, to spend on something else. She wanted to be 25 again. If she hadn't wasted so much time with Duncan, she might be better equipped to work out where it had gone. She had never been very good at algebra, and algebra was, it seemed to her, what was needed for the kind of thinking she wanted to do. One of the traps she kept falling into, and she couldn't help it, even though she was aware of it, was to equate time with Duncan as time generally, T equals D, when of course T really equated to D plus W plus S plus F and F plus C, where W is work, S is sleep, F and F is friends and family, C is culture, and so on. In other words, she wasted only her romantic time on Duncan, whereas life consisted of more than that. In her own defence, though, she would like to point out that D was more than just one element to rack up alongside the others. She saw his friends and family, for example, as well as her own, although admittedly he had fewer of both. Who knows whether W would have been different if D hadn't been living in the same town? She was guessing it might have been. They stayed put doing jobs that satisfied neither of them, because finding new work in the same place at the same time would have been almost impossible. And whose C was it anyway? He was the one who brought the music and the DVDs. He was the one who didn't like going to the theatre or to other towns to see it. She couldn't do equations really, but it was probably more like T equals W plus S plus friends and family plus C over D. And there was another part of the equation that she didn't like thinking about, her own stupidity and torpor. She had played a part in all this. She had allowed her life to drift. She would have to multiply the whole bloody lot by OST, thus ending up with a number greater than the one she'd first thought of. And if it turned out that she'd wasted 20 or 50 or 100 years, then whose fault was that? The 15 years were gone anyway. And what had gone with them? Children, almost certainly. And if she ever did take Duncan to the court, that's what she would sue him for. But what else? What hadn't she done because she'd spent too much time with the boring, faithless nerd, apart from live the kind of life she'd wanted when she was 25? She kept coming back to sex. It was reductive and unimaginative, she knew that, but it was also unarguable. Duncan had stopped her from having sex with other people, and quite often with him. They had never been the most highly sexed couple, but whoever kept score for these things would say he turned down her overtures more often than she'd turned down his. How could she make up 15 years of missed opportunity aged 39? And how much sex was that anyway? Supposing she'd met somebody she loved passionately 15 years ago, and the relationship had endured. Then it would be 15 years of sex with other men, OM, minus 15 years of sex with Duncan. To include quality, Q, in the calculation would require a mathematical sophistication that was beyond her capabilities, even though it was probably necessary to give an accurate final figure. In other words, she wanted to see if anyone would want to have sex with her. Where to start in Goulness? Dear Annie, what do you do if you think you've wasted 15 years of your life? Are you kidding me? I don't know if anyone ever told you, but I'm pretty much the world expert on this particular subject. I mean, obviously, I've wasted more than 15 years, but I'm hoping you'll overlook the extra and look upon me as a kindred spirit anyway. Maybe even your guru. First of all, you've got to get that number down. Make a list of all the good books you've read, films you've seen, conversations you've had, and so on, and give all of these things a temporal value. With a little bit of creative accounting, you should be able to reduce it to 10. I've got mine down to about that now, although I've cheated here and there. I included the whole of my son Jackson's life, for example, and he's been at school and asleep for a lot of the time-wasting years. I'd like to say that anything comes in around a decade you can write off for tax purposes, but it isn't actually the way I feel. I'm still pretty sick about what I've lost. But I only own up to myself last thing at night, which is perhaps why I'm not the best sleeper. What can I tell you? If it really was wasted time, and I'd need to examine your biographical books pretty carefully before I can confirm that for you, then I have some bad news. It's gone. You can maybe add a little onto the other end by quitting drugs or cigarettes or by going to the gym a lot, but my guess is that those years after the age of 80 aren't as much fun as they're cracked up to be. You know from my email address, if nothing else, that I have a thing for Dickens. I'm reading his letters at the moment. There are 12 volumes of them, and each volume is several hundred pages long. If he'd only written letters, he'd have had a pretty productive life, but he didn't only write letters. There are 4 volumes of his journalism, too. Big ones. He edited a couple of magazines. He squeezed in an unconventional love life and a few rich friendships. Am I forgetting anything? Oh, yeah. 12 of the greatest novels in the English language. So I'm beginning to wonder whether my infatuation is caused, in part at least, by him being the opposite of me. He's pretty much the one guy whose life you could look at and think, man, he didn't mess around. That happens, right? People get drawn to opposites. There aren't many people like old Charlie. Most humans don't get to do work that's going to last. They sell shower curtain rings, like the John Candy character in that movie. I mean, the rings may well last, but they're probably not what people talk about after you've gone. So it's not about what you do. It can't be, can it? It has to be how you are, how you love, how you treat yourself and those around you, and that's where I get eaten up. I used to spend a lot of time drinking and watching TV, not loving anybody, wives or mistresses or kids, and there's no spin I can put on that, which is why Jackson is such a big deal. He's my last hope. And I'm pouring everything that's left in me through the spout at the top of that little guy's head. That poor kid. Unless he surpasses the combined achievements of Dickens, JFK, James Brown, and Michael Jordan, he'll have let me down. And I won't be around to see it anyway.
You good?
Mm-hmm.
Some bleak realities of midlife crisis.
Yep.
Kia ora, everyone. Welcome to Chapter 1, Take 2, the podcast where we read the book, watch the film, and discuss the adaptation. My name is Maddie.
My name is Brianna.
And this week, we are covering Juliet Naked.
I may look like a nice English lady in a sensible cardigan, but these days it's a thin veneer and it's starting to crack.
Who wants to bring kids into this bloody world?
My point is, I just don't think that the world needs more kids.
I think we get it.
Tucker Kroll, one of the most unsung figures of alternative rock.
Hasn't been seen in 20 years. That's
him. Wow, he's so gorgeous.
Thank you.
I think I've had enough Tucker bloody Crow to last 20 lifetimes.
Tucker has a new album, and I don't want to spend my time with someone who doesn't get it.
Oh, somebody new.
Juliet Naked is a naked attempt to squeeze a few more quid out of a long dead career.
You wrote this.
Ooh, naked.
Ooh, naked. I actually thought the title was pretty clever when you find out later on why it's called that. The novel was originally written in 2009 by Nick Hornby, who has also written About a Boy, which is probably his works that I haven't read, but the film is something that I'm the most fan of. Is that right? Is that how you'd say that sentence?
I don't know. Yes? Question mark?
Question mark?
He also did Fever Pitch, which I really liked.
Is it a film? The film?
It's a book and a film. Nick Hornby did both.
What's Fever Pitch about?
It's about Jimmy Fallon's character, who's obsessed with the Red Sox, so he's got a lot of male characters.
Pitch Perfect.
Yeah, with Drew Barrymore.
You said Fever Pitch.
No, you're thinking Pitch Perfect.
No. The Perfect Catch.
Oh, it might be called The Perfect Catch here, but it's called Pitch Perfect in the States.
Fever Pitch in the States. Oh my god, I fucked it up. Sorry. I'll move this a little bit closer. One second.
Look, Fever Pitch.
Right. In New Zealand, it's called The Perfect Catch. Nope. I'm just making up stuff. Don't listen to me. Anyway.
It's good. You should.
It is good. So, in New Zealand at the moment, New Zealand, Aotearoa, land of the long white cloud. what?
You should do that more often. Sorry.
Why?
New Zealand, land of the long white cloud.
And gumboats and pavlova and
Aotearoa.
Kiwi fruit. I actually get asked when I was in direct customer service, customers, particularly older people, would ask me if I how long I'd lived in Christchurch and if I was from Germany.
Yep.
And I'm not. I think I've just watched a lot of film, and I also intentionally do not speak with a particularly Kiwi accent, in my opinion.
Yeah, but I like when you do. I think it's funny.
Yeah. It's too nasally. That, it almost sounds Australian. This is Australian, though. I've gone too far. I went too far over the patch. Anyway, my point was that...
In New Zealand.
Currently...
Aotearoa.
It's summer. So, throughout this recording, you probably have already heard a child screaming with joy. And now you're hearing some lawn mowing. And I apologise, but to be frank, there's not a lot we can do about it. Because
it's inevitable.
We, you know, we're just recording in our delightful lounge, which currently has a beautiful tree up.
You know, when I guest starred, Maddie did it, and then I did it. I guest starred on the Rift Drifter, which is...
The Rift Drifter!
Another Kiwi-run podcast.
Yeah, Kiwis.
A world-building podcast, story-based, very nice. So you'll see the episode drop and I'll be sharing it soon. I said when I was recording that podcast, it seems that every time I go to normally quiet neighborhood, no dogs, no children, no lawnmowers, no construction. And then as soon as we go to record something,
100%.
It's like everybody's like, got to do my outdoor chores.
100%. We literally just had a nap on the couch for an hour.
I think I'll go for a swim in the wee pool.
Which was delightful.
Yeah, and it was so quiet.
And it was silent. It was absolutely silent. And now as soon as we hit record, people are like, do you know what? I'm going to build a fence.
Yeah.
Anyway, why did you choose to read that section, Brianna?
I really like that section. I think it's a nice wee nugget window into the characters of Tucker and Rose Byrne's character.
Rose. Annie!
Annie, thank you. Annie was like a generic white girl.
Yeah, it is a generic white. It's a very generic white film.
Yeah, it is. It is, definitely. Okay, so it's great. It's a great section. And I think... There's a certain amount of beautiful, remorseful ambiance you get from the section about Annie trying to calculate out how to sum the years she spent with Duncan and her own responsibility in that in losing that part of her life, and then there's a fun little flirtation. I think with Tucker going almost like, yes, I'll play this game with you, Annie. I'll play it. Okay, so here's what you do. You subtract the good conversations and the books, and then you get a number that's a little bit more swallowable. But honestly, though, that 10 years of your life is gone, and there's nothing you can do to get it back, and you kind of just have to accept it.
I guess for me, when I think about people like that, like Tucker Crowe's character is... a dick. And so, but like, in my mind, I kind of am a bit, I'm not Annie, I'm nowhere near Annie. Like, I've taken some risks, I've made mistakes, I've had good adventures, but like, people who write off 20 years and are on the other side of drug abuse and alcohol addiction and he was a real bad father, until number five at the end. I don't know if it's because of just like, me or the fact that I'm a woman, but just like my failings have never been that extreme, and I don't know that I could care so little as to like fail that badly, and I just get confused about people like that. Like, how could you be so detached, you know? Like, I enjoy alcohol as a drug, I enjoy drug use, but it's always ever just like one in an evening, and if it's a big night, like three or four, because I'm like, first of all, I'm too afraid of the hangover the next day. And also, I don't want to damage my body or feel sick.
Well, I think that, you know, people... Okay, I mean, but like, I don't know how much you want to air out on this podcast. But I mean, people will make quite egregious mistakes in order, you know, in a moment of fear or cowardice.
I also think I'm really just breezing over... the mental health side of things.
Yeah. But I mean, I think you're also, like, forgetting like some mistakes that you've made, I think that you bounce back from them quicker. You know, there are things that you've said that you've been like, oh, I shouldn't have said that, or that have been quite hurtful, and you still think about them today. And I mean, myself, I've done things like that. The difference is that we're both in a healthy headspace, so that when we make those mistakes, we're a lot more likely to face them head on and deal with them now.
Yeah, for sure.
But think about the way you treated your poor girlfriend when you met Marlena.
I was 16.
Yeah, well,
it was whatever. Anyway, good example though.
Yeah, I'm just saying, people do shitty things to each other.
The book was adapted into the film in 2018, directed by Jesse Peretz, who also did
Peretzel,
Our Idiot Brother, which has Paul Rudd in it, as well as Zooey Deschanel and other actresses who I like, but their names, I don't know, they're too complicated, I guess. But I'm not looking at that one right now. We're talking about Juliet Naked.
Yep.
6.6 on IMDb, 83% on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't know about you, babe, but like, the book and the film to me are just real, like, meh.
Hmm.
Okay. It's classified as a romance rom-com. Rose Byrne is Annie. She's delightful. Ethan Hawke plays Tucker Crowe. Chris O'Dowd plays Duncan Thomas. He's always good for a laugh.
Yeah.
Rose Byrne and Chris O'Dowd, as their second time working together, they were also together in Bridesmaids.
Sure.
Is that right? As she, Robertson, plays Jackson, and he is also the son in Marriage Story, which came out in 2019, which was a very good film. Lily Brazier played Roz, who in the novel is just
her like friend,
who's Annie's friend, and they just work together. But they streamlined a lot. They made a lot of changes in the film compared to the novel.
Yep.
Ayola Smart plays Lizzie Crowe, who is Ethan's second to oldest daughter. He has two daughters, three sons. Two sons are twins, and then Jackson. That's all good. Oh yeah, Gina is played by Denise Goh. But the main three characters, Annie, Tucker Crowe, and Duncan Thomas. To be honest with you guys, people, friends, esteemed individuals, I looked really hard, and I couldn't find a bloody budget for this film. There was plenty about the box office, but no matter where I looked or what I googled, I could not find the budget. So I'll just, I would say a guess based on the kind of travel and maybe the film cost maybe like under 10 million.
Why are you expecting travel?
Because they do that small town in London, and then London. Like, going between different set locations.
Yeah, but they...
And also...
I mean, Tucker's entire existence in America could have been done on screen. I mean, on a soundstage.
Yeah, but 10 million's pretty cheap for a film.
No, yeah, I'm just saying.
Yeah. I don't know, it could be less. Cumulatively, worldwide gross is 4,500,000. But who knows if that does well or not, because I can't tell. So... Great.
Cool story.
Those are my facts.
Great. How would you rate the film as an adaptation of the book?
There are a lot of changes. Four.
Whoo!
There are a lot of changes.
Seven.
Really?
Yep.
What? There are a lot of changes.
Yep.
And you still, as an adaptation, you rate it as seven?
Yep.
How are you giving it that higher score with all of these changes? Ooh, the lawnmower stopped.
I feel like it was like... It was the book. Like, they I think cut it was, out it was a lot of the dead weight of the story.
Oh, yeah. I think the film is much stronger than the book.
Like, I had completely forgotten about the psychologist's counseling sessions, and they added nothing for me.
No. Okay.
And I didn't really need any more of Duncan's perspective, so.
Yeah. No, for sure. But there's, like...
And, I mean, streamlining who Roz is by making Roz the sister... Fine, don't care.
But what about the fact that they made Duncan play at the launch of Annie's exhibition at the museum when that never happens and they have two of the dancers perform instead? Like, why do you think they made that change?
I think the scene with the mayor showing, like, his, like, kind of toxic masculinity and drunkenness. was good. I enjoyed it. I thought it added to the film. And it was easier to have him play than have the two than have to introduce the two dancers more seriously.
Sure. Okay. What about the fact that we didn't get to see Duncan and Annie's tour of the US before the whole narrative starts?
I mean, I would have been more interested in the film opening with the tour of the US and getting to see Duncan break into
Julie's
house. But from like a streamlined narrative perspective, I kind of understand why they didn't do that, because it's just easier to have it open up with a video and you get all the backstory for Tucker Crow and kind of also the obsession that he has with it, with Tucker Crow very quickly.
Okay. This is the biggest change that they made that I think annoyed me the most. But Lizzie loses the baby, which is why Tucker goes to America, not to visit the newborn. And her musician boyfriend doesn't leave. So they completely changed that, and they definitely reinforced that all musicians are assholes. Whereas I really liked in the novel that Lizzie's boyfriend wasn't an asshole. Like, he stuck around. And it also shows that Lizzie was making better choices, because she didn't just, like, choose to have a child with someone who would just split.
Sure.
And I didn't appreciate the fact that, like, I feel like they didn't do that because they wanted to keep the tone of the film lighter, which I appreciate, because, you know, we're a bit of a... We're both a numb society, but also a really sensitive society. But I don't like that the baby survived, because I liked how the book did have more dark elements and it was a bit more depressing, I guess.
For me, I enjoyed the tone. It's easier to handle that kind of tonal shift, I think, in a novel than it is in a film.
I agree.
I kind of wish they had kept the miscarriage in the film.
Miscarriage, sorry, not abortion. Those are really different things. My apologies.
I wish they had kept the miscarriage in the film. I agree with you that they shouldn't have made her partner leave. I didn't think that was necessary. I think that he still could have had a redeeming moment, which is what they wanted to create by him showing up and just helping with the baby.
Yeah.
And just, you know, being around.
Well, it's something they do in films, isn't it? They choose particular elements that they decide to make harder, even though the situation is already hard enough. Like, being young parents in your 20s is hard enough. You don't also have to be a single mum in your 20s and make it even harder. Like, yeah, him showing up to help would have still been
like
a positive thing.
It is like a nice cookie-cutter demonstration of Tucker growing as a human being.
Yeah.
But I also don't think that's necessary, because I think what's more interesting is looking at the fact that, looking at his relationship with his other kids and outside of Jackson, and seeing how the fact that he's around for Jackson's childhood doesn't demonstrate in their eyes that he's grown as a person and he wants to be a better father. It just reinforces how much pain they feel at not having him around for their lives. Like, why is Jackson so important? Why did you get your shit together for Jackson but not for me? And yeah, I think that's more interesting than having him, like, trying to show another way of him improving with his daughters and his twin sons. Like, what I really enjoyed about Nick Hornby's creation of the children of Tucker Crow is that they're all quite at different places and need different things from him. Because the twins don't really seem to need Tucker in their life.
No, not at all.
They
don't really care about him at all.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's realistic of, like, I don't know, what are they, 12-year-old boys?
Mm-hmm.
They're like, the frontal cortex of my brain hasn't even developed, so I'm still thinking very internally. Like, I think it's around the age of 12 that your brain literally develops the ability to realize that other people have different wants and needs and thoughts than your own. I remember realizing that when I was 12 and being like, wow, like, does everybody know this? And it's like, of course they do.
Yeah. But I think with the... now have you got me doing it?
I know I do. I'm so sorry.
But I think with the miscarriage...
Yes.
I feel like if they had kept the miscarriage in there, it would have been unfeminist to have any more scenes with Tucker about him. Do you know what I mean?
No.
Well, because, like, to have him and his story dominate the pages after someone's just had a life-altering event, it just wouldn't matter.
But that's what happens in the book.
I know. But it's like, why is anything... Like, I know that he has a heart attack, but, like, he's fine. You know, he is fine.
He's legit
fine. And you kind of get a sense of the frustration of, like, the women in the room. But, like, if... Like, with Lizzie losing the baby, it's like, why are we... You know, she wouldn't be focusing her attention on her father.
No.
You know? Like, yeah. I think it's a little bit more realistic for her to have the baby, but have it early.
Sure. I guess I feel like sometimes I'm a representative or a knight of the book, and I'm watching the film, and I'm like, you changed it! Like, you changed it, and it was different, and who are you to change it? But I totally understand that, like, we are reviewers of book-to-film adaptations, and a lot of the time, the director's interpretation of the novel, that's the story that's being told. Like, they may not have even read the novel, do you think?
Oh, I do feel like they read the novel. Like, I read a lot of reviews.
You did.
I did. I probably read about 10.
Yeah, and what were the... I don't know. Are we all that desperate for just a classic rom-com about a bunch of white people?
I don't know that I'm desperate. I don't think that's the point. Like, if we're criticizing the book on its existence, then that's not really fair. Like, Nick Hornby writes what he writes, and they made it into a film, and we're analyzing the adaptation of it.
That's valid. I guess because we're covering this as part of our second season, which is female-led literature and film, and Annie, she is the main character. Like, the story revolves around her experience with Duncan and Tucker.
I think there's two interesting changes that we're not talking about.
All right, lay it on me, soul sister.
Number one is that in the book, we get insights into Tucker's life from his perspective and insights into Duncan's life from his perspective. And in the movie, we really basically get the story from Annie's perspective. Yeah. We do jump into Tucker's time frame because we have to, because he lives in a different part of the country a bit. But, like, for the most part, the story is 100% Annie's the protagonist.
Right.
And, I mean, she is in the book, too. We definitely get her more dominantly than the other two male characters.
Well, otherwise we wouldn't be covering it.
Yeah, but I enjoy that change, and there was...
You enjoy the change that we mainly get.
Yeah.
Annie's narrative.
I think there were suggestions in a lot of the reviews that this was done intentionally to make it a more feminist narrative.
Oh, yeah, and Duncan's boring as fuck. Especially because
we've already had, like, High Fidelity is told from the male's perspective, and Fever Pitch is... It's still from both perspectives, but you do get more, like, more of, I think, the males.
That movie...
He's much more,
in
like...
Fever Pitch.
Redeemable.
Yeah.
And also Drew Barrymore...
Her character does have a miscarriage.
Oh, yeah, she does.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a theme for him.
Yeah. Sorry, you were saying something else.
Is it a miscarriage, or does she just... She thinks she's pregnant, but she's not.
Oh, yeah, she hasn't had her period, and then she gets her period. But miscarriage is actually quite common, and when you get a heavier period, when you think you're pregnant, that is a...
Or, like a lot... There's a higher proportion of late periods that are often miscarriages.
Yeah, but...
That people don't realize.
I'm sorry that we keep bringing this up.
Yeah, well, we'll definitely chuck a trigger warning at the beginning. I think... But, like, in Fever Pitch, Drew Barrymore just accepts kind of Jimmy Fallon's character. And
obsessed. Oh, he does love obsession movies.
Yeah,
because he's obsessed. It's so funny to think of Jimmy Fallon as an actor, because to me he's just a late night show host.
Oh, sure. And so I really enjoyed that change to be more about, like, the woman's perspective in terms of dealing with these children.
Yes.
And then there's the ending. The ending is different.
The ending is different. It's much more of a wrapped up with a bow type of deal.
Oh, I disagree. I thought it was way more open.
What do you mean? The novel ends. She's in a therapy session with the old guy, and she has a sort of epiphany about the repressive nature of British culture, and then she kisses him on the forehead and walks out the door without really any kind of, like, clue to the reader what she's going to do. Like, maybe she's going to sell her house and move to the States. Who knows? Whereas in the book, in the film.
I felt like it was very heavily implied that she was going to sell her house and move to the States.
Yeah.
Because earlier in the book, she talks about how epiphanies never come at a convenient time and she never acts on them. And that's when she's out dancing. And this was, and I thought the point that's of that true. Was like, she's having an epiphany. She doesn't belong here. She's going to move to America.
She's going
to
act on it. Yeah. All right. Sure. What do you, okay. If that is how you interpreted the ending, what do you think of the film's ending where she moves to London instead and Tucker comes back to visit Lizzie?
I prefer the ending because if I'm right and the book is implying at the end that Annie goes to live with Tucker, she's just left one man to find a new future with a different man, and she hasn't actually achieved in making up for the time that she's lost or making choices that reflect what she needs and what she wants.
Yeah,
she's totally going like, I'm going to go be with Tucker, and that's not necessarily what she needs or what she wants. In the movie, it's implied that she is much more introspective and thinks about, what do I want? And the thing is, she doesn't want to be in Golden S. So she moves to London, where she can get a job working in a field that she actually enjoys, which is more like on an art side of things. It's a little bit more sentimental. And she starts... And they get rid of this thing like that's in the book just vehemently that at 39 is too old to have a child. She's lost her window for having hasn't lost her window.
I'm pretty sure I've read that the oldest woman ever to get pregnant, I think, was either 66 or 78.
Yeah.
Like she was, it was...
I think it makes her character stronger. I think it makes her a more feminist character.
Yeah, I agree. I also don't think that, men often have children, and obviously it's different because sperm regenerate, whereas you have a limited amount of eggs as a woman. But there are multiple ways to have a baby. You can adopt, you can have a surrogate, you can have all kinds of situations. Yeah. It's very single-minded to assume that because she's nearly 40, she can no longer have a child.
And I think it's better that she, like, has a year, that she gives Tucker a year to kind of get his shit together, and instead of getting... being just another woman to swoop in and be the band-aid to Tucker's, like, miserable outlook on life, it's implied that she's, like, she's basically saying, no, you have to do something.
Yeah.
You have to be, I need a man who's going to be more.
Yeah. No, I like that. I agree with that.
So I thought the ending was stronger.
You've convinced me!
I think, I don't care that the book exists that much. You know, you were like, the movie and the book are a bit meh. I felt like because there was a female screenplay adapter, I felt like we got a better version of the book. And I think that Nick Hornby as an author needs to really look at how he's writing female characters and the storyline, the finishing place that he's giving them, and examine whether or not that he's upholding the patriarchal idea of the nagging woman.
And also... when he writes in the book for Annie to not put in a female condom when that's what she's supposedly doing, I'm like, that's a real swift turn of a character to actively try and manipulate someone to get pregnant with their child that I don't think Annie would do.
Yeah.
For me, I was like, wow, that was out of nowhere. Like, I understand that she wants a baby, but, like, she's not gonna mess with Tucker, who's had such a hit and miss relationships with being a father. I don't think she's that kind of person.
That being said, I do really enjoy Annie's character in the book, like, a lot. I enjoy Annie's character, and I enjoy Tucker's character, and I, to an extent, enjoy the existence of Duncan's character.
Fuck Duncan.
I've never met anyone like him, but I can only presume that people like him exist.
Of course they do. What do you mean?
But I think there's
we see glimpses of Duncan in quite a lot of people that we know.
Well, yeah, but I mean, my point is that I really like Annie's character. I like the idea of a, you know, late 30-something, early 40-something woman examining her life and going, this isn't what I wanted, and making a change. I like how pathetic she is. I like how pathetic she and Tucker both are. I like, one of the changes that I found more disappointing is that she's staying in the seaside town because her father died and left her the museum. And I was like, ah, that's bogus. It's much better if she's made pathetic choices.
Yeah, because she used to work at a university, which is how she met Duncan.
Yeah, but I like that she's, like, it makes her more flawed.
Why did she leave, though? She went to go to the museum because she thought it would be...
Her father was sick.
Oh, he was sick?
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, in the book?
In the book.
Oh, no.
Because, yeah, she taught at a university, which is how she met Duncan, and then she goes to teach at the museum because she wanted more time or something? She wanted something...
I don't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember. But it was for a pretty neutral reason.
Yeah, and I just enjoy that, like, she's had a bit of a meh life. Like,
yeah. Do you know what we've done?
What?
We've forgotten to give a summary. So if someone hasn't read or the book or watched the film, they have no idea what we're talking about.
Yeah, you kind of get.
I mean, it's pretty simple. Like, Duncan's obsessed with Tucker Crow as a performer. Annie and Duncan are together. Duncan has a blog, an online site.
A new CD comes out, which is just the demo reel of Tucker's most famous CD. And
yeah.
Duncan gets a copy, but Annie listens to it earlier. And Annie doesn't like it, and Duncan does, thinks it's a masterwork.
Yeah.
And they have opposing views, and that becomes the opening of the rift that's already been festering in their relationship.
Yeah, yeah, I'm giving a brief overview there. Annie writes the review online, Tucker reads it, they connect, they email, and then they end up meeting up in London because Tucker comes.
And developing a relationship.
Yeah, exactly. That's the story.
But also Duncan cheats on Annie, and what a fucktard.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm always surprised by that. Like, I'm always surprised by just the...
selfish, self-serving attitude of men.
Well... just some men.
Not all men.
Not all men.
Hashtag, this particular class
hashtag
of men.
Hashtag not all men, but hashtag too many men.
Yeah.
Just really don't appreciate the woman that they're with and think they can do so much better. I'm like, bro, who do you think you are? Like, you're pretty.
Yeah, Duncan was punching.
100% he was punching.
But what I really liked about that section that I read was, you know, Tucker saying most of us can't be Charles Dickens. Most of us are people who create shower rings. We have mundane, boring lives. We leave nothing behind. And so to create a valuable life, it is the happy moments, the nice conversations, the books we read, the way that we spend our time with other people, the people that we love.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that that's the one redeeming quality of this story is it's just looking, it's being dissatisfied with where you are at in life and looking at what you value. And it's, I think there's something really lovely and midlife crisis-y about it, and a bit boring and a bit pathetic and a bit mundane, and I really enjoyed that. So I think that the story itself has value in terms of, like, but I mean, the thing I feel is that we're missing is, like, this story was written about generic white people, but it could have been written about generic black people or generic Muslim people, or
yeah,
like, we just didn't need to be, like, there could have been non-traditional, I'm air quoting that because is it non-traditional casting done, and they could
yeah, the most we get is Roz is a lesbian. Well,
yeah, and I think
super.
I kind of didn't enjoy the Roz change, like, a little bit.
No.
Like, her dating around a bunch of women who aren't lesbians. But then it's harder because the film is set at an early, like, well, the film is actually set in a more modern time than the book is. So, yeah, I'm not so sure.
Yeah. Look,
okay, the film as an
I was just going to say the film is a film. Film is a film. You go first. I always say my number first.
okay, all right. Film is a film. 5. Maybe 5.5.
Yeah, I was gonna say 6. 5 to 6. A low 6. I don't know why we're giving them such intense intervals. We have 1 to 10. Also, I love how arbitrary these numbers are. Like, it's just how we feel.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah, I mean, watched the film yesterday. I enjoyed some aspects. Like, I liked her. Duncan. Sorry. Tucker. Stop that.
Tucker, Duncan, Tucker, Tico, Dilly, Bubbly, Flippity.
Can you tell we just woke up from a nap? Tucker, stop that.
Why is it okay for you to fidget, not for me to fidget? Double standard.
Tucker writes his emails to Annie and we get some fun.
Tucker writes his emails to Annie and we get some fun.
What are you doing?
No.
Be a little silly.
I
feel silly.
I'm silly.
You feel like you're in the silly season?
I'm in the silly season.
Brie and I got all our Christmas shopping done today.
We did.
It's only the, what's today, the 12th? No, that's December. It's the 14th of December, so we've got 11 days and we're done. And I'm grateful, because bloody hell, you're so stressful.
Oh, thanks. But look how great our Christmas tree looks.
Sorry. I didn't mean it. I said that wrong. I'm sorry.
You're a punk.
It's very great.
She's a punk.
I'm a punk rock kid. Yeah. Don't want to be another man. Anyway, I was literally in the middle of a thought. I really like how we see shots of Tucker emailing Annie, like sitting on the couch and sitting on his bed and kind of just like, it's very much like a teenager.
All the acting was really
lovely. Online flirtation thing.
Yeah.
And then we get to see Annie's like real cute reactions when she receives emails from Tucker's and she's like, oh my God, like someone else is interested in me. And she's all excited. Yeah,
in spite of that's like nice. Kind of like weird circumstances.
Oh, very
weird. Like the ridiculousness of there being a pop rock star from the 80s who's been in seclusion for 25 years, suddenly coming out of seclusion to respond to a post about themselves on an obscure fandom website.
Which they would not follow.
Well, I don't know about that. Like, we Google ourselves sometimes. Like,
it's fun!
It is fun. But, like, it's pretty unlikely. It's a pretty, like, ridiculous premise. But so much of what then ensues seems very realistic. Very,
yeah,
kind of, like, you know, the way that she sees the email pop up in the middle of a conversation with her boss and she suddenly stops paying attention to everything that's happening around her and she's like, oh my God, I got an email from a boy. I've got an email from a boy!
And it's a pretty boy!
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and I think when Annie and Tucker go to have sex and they've kind of combined two different evenings when Jackson is sick and he throws up and he kind of interrupts them, yeah. Like that happens over two different evenings.
The realities of trying to find time to have sex with.
Well, I was thinking about that because I was like, in the film, you see Tucker kind of put Jackson down to bed and he's fallen asleep on the couch. And like children do, he's eating too much junk food, which is why he's sick. But I was thinking, I was like, bro, like, you're not going to be able to escape to go get some lady time.
Lady time.
I was gonna say lady bits, but I was like, no, that doesn't sound right at all.
Good evening. This is Lady Time O'Clock with Tucker Crow. I'll be playing all my greatest hits.
You're in a silly mood today.
I am silly.
You are silly.
Okay, anyway. Yes. I wrote some things down. I really enjoyed, like, I really loved the scene where she tries on the dress and she's just like, oh, it's not what I wanted. And, like, the subtle ways that she looks over her belly and she's, like, it implies that she wants children. Like, I thought that was really nice. Really, really well done. I thought the website was designed really perfectly. Like, just kind of real 90s shit website run by fans who don't know what they're doing. I enjoyed, you know, the scene with Duncan jogging and, like, I'm a runner now. You know, I'm just getting into working out. Like, that kind of meet and greet. I enjoyed that. This is what I wrote. She's more sad that Duncan seems to be more passionate about Tucker than he is about her, and she's not even passionate about his lack of passion for her. She's just indifferent and too tired and maybe tired, too pathetic to try and change her life. And that's how I feel about where we meet Annie.
Yeah.
Like, she's not really mad at Duncan for cheating on her.
She's just like, no, but I really like that she doesn't stay.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I felt the dildo scene was weird, but also kind of funny. It might be weird because we've never used a dildo. And so I'm just
I really liked that scene. I really liked because what happens is Duncan is trying to play Juliet.
Why are there no batteries?
And he's so fucking pissed off that this. And to be fair, when you want a pair of fucking batteries, it's real frustrating when you're
No, because we bought extra batteries and I put them in our little organizer center. Only did we have extra batteries, we knew exactly where they were and that they worked.
Yeah, thank you, baby.
I've reached level adulthood. Bing, bing!
Yeah, you level up. You get a level up. And Annie's like, I have fucking batteries. And she takes a dildo out, which she literally just had in her vagina, and empties out the batteries and gives them to Tucker. And like,
wait, what? She just had it in her vagina?
She was just using it.
Was she?
That's why it was in her hand.
I thought she was reaching into the bedside table to get it because she knew where they were.
She was using it.
Oh, I'm going to rewatch that scene.
Okay.
Just that scene.
Okay, just do that. And like, for me, because obviously they've been living together for 15 years, and it's, like, I don't know how openly they talk about it to each other, but Annie has talked about it in the novel already, about how uninteresting and dissatisfied she is with their sex life. Like, I love that he just kind of accepts that that's what she was doing after their fight. And then he just takes the batteries and walks away. Like, yeah. If I came in and you were using a dildo, I would have so many questions. Because I would be like, we don't even own one. And I'd be like, how have we never talked about this? But it was just, I really enjoyed the casualness of that scene. Because I was like, yeah, she's fucking sexually dissatisfied. She's using a dildo. And I love that. I thought that was really good.
Yeah.
Bree secretly got a box full of dildos, somewhere that I don't know about.
I do. Different shapes, different colours. Rainbow one. Lights up. Plays music. When you wish upon a star. Gets to the climax of the song when you climax.
Jesus.
What was I going to say? I really enjoyed the sets. I thought the sets were all pretty good. I really enjoyed the dialogue in the scene where all of his kids meet in the hospital.
Oh yeah, that I thought was, the twins were perfect. Fight scene was the really scene good.
In the grocery store was really well done. Like,
oh, it's just like the book.
Just like the book.
I also really liked the fight scene at the hospital. I thought that was probably like it was
one of the best parts of the movie.
Yeah, it was. I liked how strong it was, but I also, for me, it made me think about how I haven't had really any of those classic family dynamic moments. Like, we've seen some things with your side of the family which is like that, but my family is much more British in the sense that, like, if someone says something and then someone disagrees with them, it's much more passive aggressive and like, oh, or like, I don't really appreciate that you said that, and like, but there's no like yelling over each other so much.
Oh, I don't even know if you'd always get, I don't appreciate that you said that. It would just be like, and there'd be like attention.
Yeah, right? Attention. You gotta feel it. You gotta fucking feel it in the room. Like, it's weird how palpable emotions are.
It would be like, is that really necessary?
Yeah. Like, people come into Bree and I's home, and they often say what a nice, like, unprovoked. This isn't us just digging for compliments, but they say, gosh, your house has a very nice energy. And I'm like, yeah, bitch, it's because conflict is dealt with. There's no residue of hate in our marriage. It's all out. All the hate's out in the open.
Nah, we took the hate out and put it in the bin.
Get outside.
Get outside.
British. Now, what is this?
Put in the free box on the curb.
Yeah, what's it?
I don't know.
Anyway. I loved, by the way, I did love your change of accents between reading the emails from Annie to Tucker. I thought that was great.
Thanks, babe. What did you think about the dinner scene and Duncan's speech? Go.
It was handled really differently in the novel.
Ooh, yes it was.
Yeah, and so
it was way chill in the novel. Like, Tucker was willing to humor Duncan.
He was willing to humor, but in the film, Tucker is much more defensive of Duncan's compliments, which I think is probably more realistic, because if you've spent the last 20 years hating yourself, if someone comes in and they're asking you all these questions and they're telling you how you feel about this and they're saying what a genius you are, you'd probably be like, I don't know, would you reject that kind of praise and also being under a spotlight, like, or being so important to someone when you feel like you're a piece of trash yourself?
I guess, yes, you would maybe, but I don't know if that's the place that Tucker's in when we meet his character. Place that he's been in.
That's true.
Like, he seems to have come to terms with who he is in a sort of way. Like, he hasn't dealt with everything, but he's dealt with a lot, yeah. Yeah, like, I feel like he'd be much more of a turbulent alcoholic if he was displaying the sort of seething rage we saw in that scene in the film.
Yeah.
One of the things I missed the most from the film.
Yes.
Was like the alternative truths, like Fucker.
Oh yeah, Fucker's character good.
And the photo with the gun and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then like the slow peeling back of the realities of all those stories.
Yes.
And how they were always misconstrued and misinterpreted. And yeah. I really enjoyed
that. And Duncan's so sure about all these false
truths. Yeah, and we miss that in the film completely. We also miss just how neurotic Jackson is about the possibility of his father dying.
Yeah, he's obsessed.
And I think that's a really fun thing for a child who probably has grown up around trauma.
To
have.
Yeah.
Not a fun thing, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I really miss those two things from the film, so I'm sad we didn't get the version of the dinner scene in there. But that being said, I did appreciate the little speech about art and how once you've created art, you don't really have control about how it's received or how, who finds it important, and whether or not it's valuable to a great many millions of people, or whether or not it's valuable to like a small pocket of 10,000 people scattered across the globe, united only by the internet. I think that there's, you know, art is, once it's created, it can take on new meanings, and it's not really for you to say whether or not that meaning is valid as an artist.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that about, like, Philip Pullman and Neil Gaiman, like, when they tweet about their work. And also, I feel like also Rick Riordan is like that. It's just like, I have a lot of ideas and thoughts about my characters, but that doesn't necessarily make them more valid than anyone else's, because once I've put it on a page and you've interpreted it a certain way, that's a valid. It has a new life.
Yes. I really like the scene in the film where Annie brings the books to Tucker, and Tucker's like, he looks at one of them and he said that he's seen the film, but he wondered if the book's better. And I was like, it's funny, the movie's better. Anyway, but are we ready to wrap up?
Yeah.
I'm ready to wrap up.
Yep.
Are you ready? Rate, review, retire.
Rate, review, retire. Rate, review, subscribe.
What is wrong with me today?
Revamp, remake, retire.
Thank you, Holly. You do it. Sorry.
Help
me.
I got mine.
Me too. Me too.
One, two, three, retire.
Ooh, shocking. Yeah, yes, make more diverse films.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine.
It's fine. It is what it is. I don't know. It's not even that old. The film was made in 2018. I was like, we can do better, guys. I did look it up, though. I really like that Ethan Hawke, he's 50 now, and Rose... What's her name?
Byrne.
She's 41, and I really like the age gap. Like, yeah. I think that's really strong. Yeah, and I'm happy about that. But yeah, retire it. It's fine. It is what it is. But I liked, yeah, I agree with the nuances that we talked about with the female lead.
Yeah. Do you think Rose Byrne is a strong female character? Do you think Annie's a strong female character?
Yeah. I think she definitely ends the film stronger. Like... because of the journey that she goes on, she becomes a stronger character.
Sure. I read a really lovely article. I did just want to bring this up about how the two male characters are kind of like the more quote-unquote interesting characters. They have the more interesting scenes. You know, you get Tucker and Duncan scenes where they're fighting at the dinner table, and then you get Tucker's revelation about Grace and why that's difficult, and then the phone call scene, and really... in a lot of ways, even though Rose is a central character, she serves as a person to sort of nudge Tucker and Duncan in the right direction. There's a quiet brilliance to Rose Byrne's performance of Annie, and also to Annie's role, because she is the quiet female in the background holding everything together for these two men. And that's why maybe I like her so much. She's often unappreciated, and she's really delicate, and you see that reflected in other parts of her life, like in the scene with the mayor. And I think that's what's so beautiful and nuanced about her as a character. And there's a good review, and I will have Maddie link that in the description, because she's our tech. And that's just something that I wanted to leave you with, some thoughts about the female woman, because even though she's not like quote-unquote strong, she's not like a Black Widow or a Wonder Woman, she's the quiet, mundane reality, real strength. And I know so many women like her.
Oh, women are the glue that holds society together, my friend.
So many women like her. And I just really appreciated her this week.
Yeah, 100%. Thank you so much for listening. This is Chapter 1, Take 2, a book to film review podcast. We have Instagram. We have Facebook. Facebook is the place to be if you want to see what's happening with me. Mainly us, but us doesn't rhyme with what I was singing. We have Twitter. CH1TK2, chapter 1, take 2, or written out as text at outlook.com. If you want to flick us an email, we'll be like, hey, did you read this thing? I saw this thing, and you covered this book, and that made me think, hey, blah, 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 blah.
Blah, 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 blah.
Next week, we will either be covering, we'd release an episode every 2 weeks because reading a book a week is just too much. So I'm sorry, we both have full-time jobs and we try to feed ourselves and keep a clean house, and being an adult alive in 2020 has been a hard go, my friend.
I would actually say we might not release another episode until the 9th of January.
Was it?
Yeah, the other days fall so close to public holidays, and I reckon podcasts get public holidays.
Is that you've decided?
Yeah.
The next episode will either be Witches by Roald Dahl or How Stella Got Her Groove Back by...
Terry McMillan. Terry McMillan. Both, I believe, have some interesting controversies around them.
Both? Interesting controversy. You will have to listen.
Yeah.
And find out.
Have a little squish.
Thank you so much. Please do rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is the last episode before the holidays.
This is.
I would like to just say a very merry, very special Merry Christmas to all of the Annies in the world making Christmas happen.
Also, happy holidays if you don't celebrate Christmas.
Valid.
And also, just, you know, take care of yourselves. You know, we care about you. And this is actually, here's the thing. Bree and I have now been doing the podcast for 1 year. We didn't do really anything for our 1 year celebration because we were putting on our first show based on lessons we've learned in our relationship, which the incredibly talented, my darling Brianna wrote.
Oh, shucks.
You love it. So we missed that. Sorry about that. But I'm sure we'll do something, I don't know, when life settles down, if that ever happens. But yeah, 1 year. So, you know, the podcast wouldn't exist without our listeners. So thank you so much. It's really awesome. I've loved doing this. How have you felt about this year of our first podcasting experience?
It's been great. Read some books I wouldn't have otherwise read. Some books I've always wanted to read. Some books that have really changed me. And got some lovely conversation about it.
Yeah, got some lovely. We've had some great guests,
really stunning guests.
Really enjoyed a lot of guests. I'm not going to start naming people because that becomes a competition and that's not good. But anyway, yeah, thank you. Just want to say thank you.
Yeah, but you know who you are. If you are our favorite.
You're my favorite.
Aww.
Tee-hee. Love you. Yeah, great. Our third season. It's still a while away, and we're going to be doing dystopian societies.
Yeah.
Which I'm pumped to get into. You know, I've read the Pretty Special series, because Brie got me into them, and they haven't been made into a film. Where are this? I would love to see this.
Agreed.
I'd love to see this, just really pretty people.
Agreed.
Brie's time to wrap it up.
Yeah.
All right. See you next
Merry
time.
Merry Christmas to you.
Happy holidays.
Oh, no.